and the fact that I could read him made him extra nervous. I was going to burn in hell for how much I was enjoying that state of mind.
"Whatever you think you're reading, you're wrong," he shot back. "You can barely hold it together in a crowd, so I doubt you're that good at this whole empath nonsense."
"Holy crap. You're an empath?"
Tatiana gasped, and I could almost feel her closing off, or elegantly trying, anyway. I was already exhausted, and knowing that the more they tried to hide from me, the louder their emotions blared through me, I let out a heavy sigh and decided to address the problem.
"Listen, yeah, I'm an empath. I feel you all, and the more you try to keep stuff from me, the heavier I feel it. I strongly recommend that you all just relax when I'm around. I won't tell anyone what I'm experiencing, unless asked, and only if it's for a good cause. I'm not comfortable with it either, and I'm still trying to learn to keep it under control, but today has been kind of crazy, and my control buttons are all glitchy. Just don't worry about me feeling you. I can, and that's cool. I won't judge, I promise. Chances are I won't even pay attention," I said in one long breath, then turned to look at Wade.
"As for you, Mr. High and Mighty, my sensors are quite attuned after all these years, so yeah, I know exactly what you're going through whenever you're around me. We both know that I annoy you and that I make you uncomfortable, and that's cool. I like making you uncomfortable."
I ended my statement with a grin. Raph stifled a chuckle, then pretended to drink from his coffee mug when he noticed my gaze shifting to him. He was a peculiar creature indeed, and I had a hard time putting my finger on what was off exactly.
"What's up with you? What's your story?" I asked him.
He blinked, as if taken by surprise, without his pocket notes handy for quick answers.
"What? What do you mean?
Why are you here? I hear your dad's the big kahuna in the council, and this is a coven of mediocres and jaded rejects," I replied, giving Wade an intentional sideways glance, instantly feeling his wrath boiling through my veins. My inner devil giggled.
"So how'd you end up here?"
Raph was a little worried, choosing his words carefully. Anxiety was creeping up, too, along with what sounded like maniacal laughter in the back of my head. This was all kinds of weird, and I was fascinated.
"Can we just call it difference of opinions when referring to why I got transferred here?"
he replied with an impish smile.
"That doesn't clear anything up," I said.
"What you need to do is fill out the damn form so I can pass it to HR by the end of the day," Wade interjected.
I gave him a brief scowl, then continued writing my bogus birthday into one of the boxes, followed by my current address and social security number.
"My dad and I don't get along," Raph conceded. "At all. He's a very powerful warlock, and everybody looks up to him. Some even fear him. I'm very different from the rest of my family. That's pretty much the whole gist. And they're all traditionalists, while I'm more of a liberal."
"Yeah, I get the whole different from the rest of the family part," Dylan said. "My mom thought I was going to take up a football scholarship at Yale. Instead, I'm here, and I'm signed up for community college so I can stay close to the coven."
"Why didn't you go to Yale?" I replied. "Surely there's a coven in New Haven."
"I thought about it. Thing is, my magical abilities have a lot to do with my athleticism," Dylan said, his shoulders dropping. "I'm what they call a Herculean, and the New Haven Coven is currently under investigation. The last thing they needed was a raw, late-blooming magical who was bound to stand out on the Yale football team, and not in a good way."
"A raw magical is kind of like letting a wildfire loose," Tatiana explained. "Dylan needs constant monitoring in the first year as a coven magical. Mainly because he's just found his esprit, and he has to learn to control it. Right now he's like a nuclear warhead without any safety measures. One wrong nudge and boom, all of New Haven will witness one hell of a football game."
I frowned. I thought the esprit was meant to control one's power, not make it worse.
"It does, once you get used to it. And that takes time and practice," Dylan replied. "Trust me, I know."
"What's your esprit?" I asked. Dylan showed me his high school graduation ring, cast in silver with a football encrusted in mother of pearl against a black enamel backdrop, and smiled,
I love football, and I got this from my coach when I graduated high school. It means the world to me. It reminds me of what my life could have been had I been born a human.
You don't sound too excited to be a warlock, I said.
Honestly, I'm not. He sighed. But it's kind of growing on me. I'm in an adjustment period, I guess. They want me to spend less time with my college buddies, but that's not going to happen. Those are my boys.
I had a feeling he'd spent his whole life pushing his magical abilities back, fighting his nature with everything he had, until one day he went, like Tatiana had so eloquently put it, boom, and was detected by the San Diego Coven. My mojo had come in gradually. I'd already had my adjustment period, and I'd never denied my true nature. I hadn't embraced it, but I'd learned to make good use of whatever I could to navigate my existence in the normal world.
Have you found your esprit yet? Santana asked me, apparently uncomfortable with where the conversation was headed.
No one seemed to like hearing Dylan's longing for his human life. Their magical existence was a reason for pride, and they loved it, while Dylan was still struggling with the whole concept.
Nope, I said, shaking my head. Don't worry, you'll find it, Santana replied, and showed me hers.
It was a keychain, shaped like a guitar, with intricate and colorful detailing engraved around a Mexican sugar skull in the middle.
I found this in a small souvenir shop in Catemaco, my hometown back in Mexico, 2 years ago. We just clicked. The moment I touched it, I knew.
Tatiana then showed me hers, a beautiful sterling silver bracelet with a single round sapphire. Its crystalline blue was almost hypnotizing.
My mother gave this to me when I turned 14. It was one of the few good things I ever got from the Vasilis clan.
There was sadness in her voice, uncharacteristic of her otherwise icy demeanor, and I could feel it deep in the pit of my stomach. Wade noticed my expression but didn't bother to fill in any blanks, like before. Instead, he pointed at the form.
Finish that.
I hate you, I replied dryly.
I'm not here to be liked.
Then why are you here? I retorted.
He's one of the best warlocks in this city, and probably the whole state of California,
Astrid said, beaming at me.
He's not the most likable character in this coven, but his heart's in the right place. And he's less of a jerk than, say, Garrett and his evil sidekick Finch.
They all chuckled, and even Wade allowed himself a half-smile in response to Astrid's attempt at a compliment. I liked her. She was sweet but blunt, like a sugar-coated hammer.
What's up with Garrett, by the way? I can't read him. I can't read Finch either.
And a few other people in this place. I don't usually get that, I said, then looked up at Wade. He didn't have an answer, and neither did the others. All I got in return were heads slowly shaking and mild shrugs. Raph seemed interested, though.
Have you tried feeling them? Like, reach out instead of letting their emotions come to you?
That's not how empathy works. I pursed my lips. I don't have to try anything. I automatically feel them. The only thing I need to work on is blocking certain or all emotions. I'm like a cell phone tower. Whatever signal comes out, I catch it.
I've never met an actual empath. I've only read about them in books.
You people are so rare, Raph replied, fascinated.
I guess they don't have accurate info on your ability.
Or maybe it varies from one empath to another. Beats me, I shrugged.
Point is, there are some magicals I can't read. 5 I know of for sure. Garrett, Finch, O'Halloran, Preceptor Belmore, and Imogene Whitehall. There were others in the assembly hall, but I don't know who they are.
I wouldn't worry too much about that if I were you, Raph said. Some magicals might have natural barriers. I can look into it if you'd like. I could also suggest some light reading for you to brush up on your empathy knowledge.
That would be great, thanks, I smiled. Seriously, I appreciate it.
Like I said, you're rare,
Raph nodded respectfully.
Empaths used to be regarded with great reverence in the Middle Ages. They helped witches avoid the angry villagers and the religious zealots. Today there are maybe 300 empaths in the entire world.
Oh, hell, that is rare, I said, suddenly feeling like a white tiger, or a white rhino, depending on the amount of carbs I consumed throughout the week.
She's a full elemental, too,
Wade added, and a telekinetic. The whole team gawked at me, as if I were the single most extraordinary thing they'd ever seen. It was awkward and flattering at the same time, and my cheeks burned with delight. I'd never felt so revered in my entire life.
Wow, Astrid breathed, her lips stretching into a bright smile.
You're freaking incredible, then. I think you could easily compete with Wade here.
Scratch that, you're a full elemental. I'll bet with a bit of practice and education, you'll be running circles around him and Garrett.
Dial down the enthusiasm, Wade replied with a smirk. She just got a reading from Adley and was classified as a mediocre.
Their faces went blank, and I felt my heart sinking. The mediocrity reminder was efficient in its crushing of my wings. I just started soaring and soaking up all the admiration from our rag team, and Wade just stomped in and left me tattered. The jerk. Clearly, he was extremely competitive, and that just made me want to beat the odds and actually end up running circles around him, just so I could wipe that smirk off his face.
I don't buy it, Santana said, shaking her head.
What? That she's a mediocre?
Adley is never wrong, Santana, Wade said, crossing his arms.
Nope, not buying it. Something's off. Harley, you should get tested again in a few months, Santana replied. There is no way that you're a full elemental and an empath on a mediocre level. That title stays with you your whole life, and it seriously limits your magical prospects. I can't believe it. Sorry.
I shrugged, hopefully. Adley did say I should get tested again.
You should, Astrid nodded. I've been with this coven since I was 10, and trust me, someone like you is once in a generation, at most. You being a mediocre is like saying that Hiroshima was just a firecracker. I'm with Santana on this one. Not buying the verdict.
I'm not surprised.
Garrett's voice slithered in, prompting us all to look up.
You're all usually in denial anyway. But once a mediocre, always a mediocre. I can't believe I'm saying this, but Wade's right. Miss Smith here is bland, at best.
Garrett was smirking at me, hands in his pockets, his beige waistcoat unbuttoned and his navy blue shirt sleeves rolled up. Standing next to him was Finch, along with the other magicals on his investigative team, and they made my stomach churn. I could feel the disdain toward me, and it brought back the nastier prep school memories, specifically ones that got me sent to the principal's office one too many times. It wasn't a good idea to provoke me. I always retaliated. I take it you're the token handsome jackass in this place? I retorted, putting on an arctic smile.
You think I'm handsome?
Garrett replied.
Don't you have something better to do, Keitler?
Wade stood, his irritation burning through my nerve endings. Garrett and Wade have been sort of competing with one another since they first got here. Astrid whispered to me. They're both ridiculously good, but end up acting like raucous teenagers whenever they're in the same room. That little morsel of information suddenly put things in perspective, where these two alpha males were concerned. Garrett was the harsh realist with a bad mouth and great magical skills, who seemed to love and hate the San Diego Coven at the same time. Wade was the by-the-book kind of warlock, equally respected as far as his magical skills were concerned, but he still carried that stiff arrogance around like a badge of honor. Both of them were hot, and yet in need of a good slapping.
We've got our action plan ready, Garrett shrugged. I see you're still struggling with an employment form.
Alton placed you in charge of the investigative team so you could put your time and resources to better use, Wade said. And yet here you are, proving exactly why you shouldn't be put in charge of anything other than drinks at the cafeteria.
My team and I were just stopping by for some drinks, Crowley,
Garrett replied.
I figured it would be nice to say hello and remind you of the inevitable outcome of whatever you try to do. By the end of the year, I'll be the top scorer in this place, not you.
I like how you say things out loud sometimes, Keitler. It's almost as if you're hoping that'll make them true.
Wade shot back.
Why don't you focus on the investigative team for now and not squander this amazing opportunity you've been given? Though we both know you don't deserve it.
Jealousy is not a good color on you, Crowley,
Garrett sneered, while Finch's steely blue gaze attempted to drill holes into my very soul. Seriously, what in the world did I do to him?
If you think that's what this is about, you're an even bigger idiot than I thought, Santana chimed in, leaning her elbows on the table. Why don't you mind your own business, chica?
Don't you have a genie to babysit?
Finch shot back, narrowing his eyes at her.
Are you so insecure that you feel the need to degrade those who don't put up with your crap, Finch?
You should know better than to actively try and piss off magicals who are more powerful than you, Santana replied through gritted teeth as she shot to her feet.
Raph gently caught her arm in an attempt to hold her back, and I could feel her softening up a little. She seemed to respond to his touch, her anger subsiding, while Raph's dark gray-blue gaze settled on Finch.
I could take you on any time, anywhere, Finch said, grinning. You're delusional to think otherwise.
Oh, yeah? How about we try that right now? You clearly haven't learned your lesson since last week, Santana said, once again riled up.
Don't fall for those cheap tricks,
Raph intervened, standing up next to her.
You already have 2 warnings. They're just trying to get you to lash out.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Santana smirked, watching Finch's expression turn from bright to sour.
Since it's forbidden to strike a coven member unless it's in self-defense, you boys are such cowards that you need us to hit first, so you can have an excuse to behave like the monsters we keep in the bestiary.
I don't need an excuse to make you choke on humble pie, Finch retorted.
Now, now,
Garrett stepped in, visibly amused.
No need to get all aggressive here. If you rag kids can't take the truth, you should stick to more human jobs. Surely there are still openings in the center. I heard they were looking for tour guides.
He seemed to enjoy pushing people's buttons, avoiding direct aggression just so he could claim moral superiority. Garrett had the makings of an accomplished sociopath. Frankly, I'm perpetually fascinated by your species, I mused, looking up at him.
I'm not surprised, Garrett replied. You're a late bloomer. Magicals are obviously a thing of wonder for you.
No, I didn't mean magicals when I used the term species. I meant mouth breathers, I said. You're also insecure and frustrated by your own shortcomings that you need to distract yourselves by picking on others. Anything to get your minds off your own inadequacies. It's kind of sad to watch.
The amount of hatred pouring out of the investigative team, except for the 2 stooges I couldn't read, of course, was almost suffocating. I'd hit a nerve.
Finch opened his mouth to say something, but Garrett squeezed his shoulder and stopped him.
If I were you, I'd be more worried about your inadequacies, Garrett replied. The magical world isn't all glitter and unicorns, Harley. You either get tough or you get trampled. It's what the rest of your rag team doesn't get, and apparently neither do you. We're not here to spare your feelings. You kids need to toughen up.
I don't need my feelings spared, I replied. I just don't want a bunch of tools poking me because they don't have better things to do with their time.
Someone should teach you to respect your elders, Finch burst out and took a few steps toward me.
You want to teach me about respect? Are you hearing yourself, mouth breather?
I didn't cave in. Years of bullying had already taught me not to put up with this kind of nonsense, even if I had to get physical. All it took was one hit to teach any bully not to try that again. Not with me. Finch was clearly asking for it, and judging by the smirk on his face, he didn't think I had it in me. Before either Garrett or Wade could step in, Finch moved in closer, his hand reaching for my throat. He probably wanted to intimidate me, given that our glaring contest didn't seem to have an end in sight. My instincts kicked in, and I got him first with a telekinetic thrust. The mental lasso gripped his throat, and I waved him away like a pesky fly. The hand gesture coincided with Finch being thrown across the hall like a rag doll. He landed on top of another table. The legs gave out, and Finch ended up on the floor with another thud and a painful groan as he held his side with both hands. I probably cracked a rib. Gasps erupted from nearby magicals, while Wade and Garrett kept the rest of our teams away from each other.
That's enough, Wade growled. Garrett, don't push this any further. You'll get us all in unnecessary trouble. Get your girl under control, then, Garrett hissed,
then gave me an appreciative sideways glance, the corner of his mouth twitching.
Though I have to admit, she's got spunk.
I'm confused, I murmured, before Wade grabbed my arm and pulled me back a couple of feet. Poe Dexter rushed over to Finch and helped him up, followed by Lincoln Montnoir. Both held back Finch, who'd come to his senses and was eager to retaliate. Poe even snatched Finch's custom-made copper-colored lighter, which had started to glow white between his fingers. That was Finch Anchor's esprit, I realized. One could take the esprit away from a magical if they wanted to prevent them from inflicting too much damage. Good to know.
Let's go, Garrett called out to Finch and the others. We've got prep work to do for tomorrow. Leave these snowflakes be.
With one final smirk, Garrett and his team walked out. Finch threw me a deadly glare over the shoulder, and chills ran down my spine. I needed to keep my guard up going forward. He'd either learned his lesson, or he was going to come back for seconds. In any case, I was ready. Hopefully others watching had also understood not to try and pick on me.
What the hell, Harley?
Wade turned to face me. He was livid, and I took advantage of his emotions coursing through me to hold my ground and stand by my actions.
What the hell what? I defended myself. You provoked him. You're lucky we were all here, Wade replied. Don't do that again. Don't let them get to you. They're jerks who know every loophole in the Coven regulations, and you're new here. There's only so much Alton will be willing to overlook before he starts handing out the penalties. This isn't just a school. It's a coven. And Alton's not a headmaster here to tackle the bullies. We fend for ourselves before it gets to the point where it needs to be reported.
So this doesn't need to be reported?
Really?
I asked incredulously.
No, because Alton's too busy to deal with this crap. And Garrett's too gifted and well-connected to suffer any consequences over a minor brawl. The same goes for Finch, since he's Garrett's friend, he said, heavily displeased.
So what, was I supposed to just let him hit me?
His arm would have come off if he did, Santana said from the side. You're not helping,
Wade reprimanded her, then shifted his focus back to me.
You're part of a team now. If you take a hit, we take a hit. But we stick together. So measure your thoughts and your actions carefully from now on. Everything you do has an impact on all of us.
That's not fair, I mumbled, feeling his anger subside.
Tough luck, Harley. Life isn't fair.
Wade sighed. Oh, gee, thanks, Wade. I had no idea. I've been living it up in my elite ivory tower for so long. It's good to finally come across a bundle of wisdom, such as yourself, to enlighten me on how tough life can be. A few moments went by in absolute silence, and I caught glimpses of my surroundings. Two magicals from the cafeteria were hauling the broken table out, giving me annoyed glances. Their frustration made me feel terrible. I should have at least thrown Finch into a clear space and not ruined the furniture. Santana, Tatiana, and Astrid seemed mildly amused. Dylan was impressed. And Raph... Well, Raph was still confusing, half of him laughing on the inside with almost childlike delight, while the other worried about the repercussions.
Now fill out the damn form and let's get this out of the way, Wade said, resuming his seat at the table.
I sat next to him and put in the last of my details, ending with a signature, while the others watched in silence. Despite what I just endured with Garrett and Finch, I still kind of liked this place. It was definitely better on the rag team. At least they treated me with respect, my banter with Wade aside. I couldn't bring myself to trust anyone easily, but I was fascinated by the people I'd been teamed up with. They were all misfits, in one way or another. Flaring tempers, sharp tongues, and difficult personalities seemed to be the defining features in this group. In that sense, I was a perfect fit.
Chapter 15.
After I filled out the employment form, we spent about an hour putting together an action plan for the following day. Well, technically speaking, I listened and nodded while Wade told everyone else what they needed to do in his signature slightly condescending tone. Before I left the coven, Wade also had me stand in front of the emergency door in Kid City for another half hour until I got the Aperi Portam spell right.
Not that it was all that complicated. Once I pronounced it correctly, the door opened back into the coven. It took 10 fails till I got it right, given how Americanized my Latin pronunciation was, after which he made me get it right another 10 times in a row, between short bouts of bickering. I'd also learned that this was one of 3 access points into the coven, the most inconspicuous one for that matter, since no one thought to look in Kid City for a way in. It was an interesting risk to take, but it seemed to work. I was quite pleased with myself, as I'd never uttered a spell before in my life. Wade, on the other hand, insisted on toning down my enthusiasm.
It is literally the easiest spell you could perform. A parrot would be able to do it if it were gifted with chaos energy like a magical, he'd said.
Oh, Wade, the nail clipper to my wings. By the time I got home, the evening was slowly setting in, strips of dark pink and orange splashing across the sky. I was tired, but strangely at peace. There was leftover Chinese in my fridge, but for some reason I wasn't hungry. My brain was so pumped with everything I'd learned about myself, the coven, and the magicals that my appetite didn't make it back home with me, and food was literally the last thing on my mind. The coffee beans were still scattered on my bedroom floor. I chuckled, then took out the broom and dustpan and proceeded to clean that up, while I quietly went over the events and discoveries of the day. The main assembly hall had really messed with my empath senses, and I was finally in a state of mind that was relaxed enough to allow some proper mulling. I started to wonder whether I already had my esprit, but just didn't know what it was. After tossing the beans away, I touched my little medallion of St. Christopher, hoping I'd feel something that wasn't there before. However, nothing came through, other than the soft coolness of gold against my fingertips. Could it be something else I own? I said thoughtfully, glancing around the living room. What were the objects that I was most attached to? What items made me feel intensely about something, anything, or everything at once? What was I emotionally invested in? I looked out the window, my gaze settling on my Daisy, parked outside by the main entrance. She was my most beloved belonging, but I doubted she'd make a good esprit. She was way too big, and I couldn't see myself wielding her with the dexterity that Wade displayed, for example, with his 10 rings. Then there was the note from my father. I pulled it out of my wallet, running my fingers over its yellowed paper. It was starting to lose its battle with time already. In another 10 or 20 years, it would start to disintegrate. My connection with the esprit is eternal. This was just a piece of paper, with loving and apologetic words from my dad. Besides, it didn't feel different. It still offered me comfort, along with the notion that I wasn't really alone in this world, but it didn't feel like an esprit. At least not based on how I'd heard others describe its link to the magical. Both Tobe and Alton had said that I would instantly feel my connection to the esprit. Santana had taken it a step further, describing the sensation like something akin to liquid happiness. I moved around the house, touching random objects, from keys to rings and bracelets, and even the cutlery I'd bought the other week. But nothing came through. It dawned on me then that I didn't really know what real happiness felt like. Letting a sigh roll out of my chest, I sat on the floor with my legs crossed. I stared at my father's note for a while, until tears burned their way up and clouded my vision. I'd never experienced happiness, not in the way Santana and the others had described it. I'd felt relief and joy, especially when I realized that the Smiths were a decent foster family and not the dysfunctional maniacs I'd been forced to put up with before. But real happiness? That was out of my reach somehow. Tears fell from my eyes, droplets spreading on the wooden floor as I finally let go and just cried. I'd been apparently holding that in for a long time, given how relieved I felt at being able to let it all out. There were so many emotions I'd bottled up inside, since I'd always been busy holding it together as an empath, feeling others more than myself. I longed for my real family,
the parents that left me at an orphanage, my mother, my father. I couldn't understand why they'd abandoned me, and that note was barely a band-aid on a much bigger wound. And the thing that hurt me the most was the fact that the coven sounded like a real family, but I was so terrified of being abandoned again that I couldn't bring myself to trust them. I was afraid they might kick me to the curb the moment I did something wrong. And for someone used to being on her own, that would have been devastating. Opening myself up and allowing myself to trust others was a huge step. This underlying fear of abandonment was actively sabotaging my thought process. I worried that the coven might reject me in the end. With all my tough talk about being an independent girl, I secretly longed for someone to throw their arms wide open and say, "Welcome home, Harley." The closest I'd ever gotten to the idea of a real family had been the Smiths. But by then, the emotional damage had been done, thanks to the foster system. I'd been unable to really open up to them, to accept them as a permanent part of my life. There was something awfully wrong with me. I was, by all definitions, damaged goods. My heart stopped as a large shadow loomed over me. Ice trickled through my veins, goosebumps racing across my skin as I recognized the low growl coming from behind me. I'd heard it before, behind the casino parking lot. Claws scratched the floor, and I caught movement at the corner of my eye. There were three of them, I realized, as dread clutched my throat and cut my air off. I slowly turned my head, just in time to stare into the horrific face of one of three gargoyles in my apartment. The ashen, leathery skin, the crooked stump of a nose, the sharp, bony limbs, and the skinny wings. I'd learned already that not all gargoyles looked alike, but from what I could see, they were all the epitome of grotesque. Why me? There was no time to figure out an answer to that question, not when a monster was literally crouched behind me, its bat ears flicking as it bared its humongous fangs with a spine-chilling hiss. Strings of drool stretched from its jaws to the floor. It was hungry, as were the other two beasts circling around me. Big black marble eyes watched me as I moved slowly, ever so slowly, so as not to set the gargoyles off before I could at least put a couple more feet between us. The main one was big and burly. The other two were slightly smaller in size, but just as vicious. I managed to switch into a position facing the beast. Just as it lowered its head and opened its mouth, a guttural rumble pouring out of its throat. It came at me. I waved it away, using my telekinetic force to knock it back a couple of feet. The others growled and scampered across the floor, their jaws snapping as I pushed them away, then ran into the kitchen. The big one lunged after me, its jaws crashing through one of the kitchen counters as it missed me by inches. The marble tops crumbled and the wood panels splintered, but I managed to turn the water faucets on. The gargoyle tried to bite into me once more, but I had enough water coming through to pull a thick sheet of ice over its head. Apparently, my fear and survival instincts were great at bringing out my elemental abilities. I pushed the frozen gargoyle away with a telekinetic pulse, then jumped over the remaining counters into the living room area. The big one was busy shaking its head and clawing away at the ice covering its gnarly face, while the other two gargoyles rushed toward me. Their wings fanned out as they knocked over everything in their path. Lamps, magazines, and trinket boxes fell to the floor with heartbreaking clanks and screeches as the creatures damaged everything in their path. My phone was still on my bed, where I dropped it prior to cleaning up the coffee beans, and my father's note was on the floor. I knew I couldn't handle all three gargoyles at once. In less than a minute, the big boy was going to get free and come at me again. Out of options and desperate to call for help, as well as to retrieve the single precious object my parents had left me, I pushed out another telekinetic wave, surprisingly stronger than my previous attempt. The gargoyles were slapped to the side like overgrown flies, and I dashed across the living room, jumping over an armchair and grabbing the fire extinguisher I kept in the hallway. I grabbed the note and quickly tucked it in my back pocket. But there was no time to get the phone, too, as the two smaller gargoyles attacked again. I flipped the safety loose and shot out a thick, white cloud. The foam blinded them, giving me the 2 seconds I needed to slip past them and run to the door. The big one, free of its icy mask, cut in, preventing a clean escape. "Damn it!" I cursed under my breath and glided backward as the gargoyle thumped through the living room toward me, its claws breaking the wooden flooring. I froze, my back against the window, my whole body shivering as the beast in front of me shuddered with delight. Another second, and I would become its dinner. Something inside me roared like thunder, unwilling to give in yet. The air around me thickened. I could feel it tickling my fingertips, beckoning me to wield it. I'd done it before, though not with the strength I would have needed to disable a fiend as savage as this. But I had to try. There was no other choice. I summoned all the energy I could muster. And, for the first time ever, I sensed the particles of chaos flowing through me. My mind went into overdrive, and I thrust my hands out. The winds outside listened, rumbling and whistling as they crashed through the window. I ducked as broken glass exploded everywhere. Shards cut through the beast's face and eyes, and it hissed from the pain. With no other route to safety, I braced the winds and leapt onto the windowsill. My breath hitched as I looked down at the sheer drop. And then I closed my eyes, abandoning myself to the air. The winds circled around me, and I could feel the cool flow of air brushing against my body as I hovered closer to ground level. I couldn't hold the current for much longer, and I ended up dropping for another 10 feet. The gargoyles roared inside my apartment, just as I landed in the middle of the street. People screamed around me. Of course. I was in the city. People were everywhere. My shoulder throbbed as it had absorbed most of the shock of the fall. I managed to look up, counting 6 innocent people about to get introduced to gargoyles, plus more coming in from both ends of the street, along with the ones poking their heads out through the windows of my apartment building. They were all drawn to the noises and the sight of me crashing in the middle of the street. "All of you, stay back," I shouted, waving them all away. "Run!" Some of them listened and immediately darted away while dialing 911. Others weren't as fast, but at least they couldn't actually see the gargoyles, from what I could tell. Otherwise, they all would have screamed at the sight of 3 monstrous fiends snarling at me from the 5th-floor window. "Oh, no," I gasped, my eyes wide as I caught sight of the gargoyles jumping out. The small ones landed on the pavement, crushing the slabs of concrete beneath. I heard people gasping, then a scream. That was me, watching the big gargoyle land on my car and mauling it in the process. "My Daisy!" I cried out at the sight of the Mustang's hood mangled under the weight of that beast. My heart was instantly torn. Rage became my primary fuel as I sprang to my feet. "You son of a—" I stilled, noticing the smaller gargoyle set their sights on a couple of humans who were gawking at my car, unable to understand what invisible force had crashed into it. The big one sneered at me, its hind wiggling as it prepared to pounce and come at me again. I was still overwhelmed, but with more space to move. At the same time, there were humans that needed protection. Damn it! A flash of fire shot across my field of vision, hitting one of the smaller gargoyles. Wade came through the gathering crowd on my left, whispering a spell. His rings lit up blue, and a pulse shot out of his hands, spreading outward into an iridescent globe,
that swallowed us and the gargoyles, keeping everybody else out. Time seemed to stand still on the outside, people wide-eyed and frozen as they stared at us. Relief washed over me at the sight of Wade, but my troubles weren't over yet.
"Keep the big one busy for a minute,"
Wade instructed me, then shot fire beams from his fingers at the other two, who were trying to claw their way out of the globe-shaped shield that was keeping us in. The flames licked at the two gargoyles, while I temporarily shifted my focus back to the big one. It moved fast, zigzagging across the street as it raced toward me. I managed to latch onto it with a mental lasso, then dragged it to the left with a swing powerful enough to slam it into the energy barrier of the protective shield. It shook its head, momentarily dazed, then sprang to its feet and came at me again. Wade lashed fire whips at the gargoyles, killing them both with one devastating blow as the thick rope of fire cut through their chests. They crumbled to the ground, wheezing and hissing as they disintegrated into two puffs of charcoal smoke and dust. I pushed out a telekinetic barrier in an attempt to shove the remaining gargoyle back, but all it did was nudge it. It growled and continued its advance, as I scampered backward and tried to latch onto it with another mental lasso. It was moving too fast, having already learned my move. Wade slipped between us, muttering a spell as he put his hands out, rings glowing red. Crimson beams shot out from his fingertips, then softened into fluorescent strings that wrapped themselves around the gargoyle. One by one, the energy ropes tightened around the beast until it could no longer move and fell flat on its face.
"Open this,"
Wade said, then handed me a mason jar. I took it and removed its lid, while Wade rushed around the beast, dropping green entrapment stones along the way. The gargoyle struggled against its magical restraints, which started to pop and vanish one at a time. Wade spoke the entrapment spell. The sturdier green beams I'd witnessed during our previous gargoyle encounter stretching out and trapping the beast beneath. Only then was I able to breathe, the last of the red strings fizzling out. The gargoyle was well secured this time.
"What is going on?"
I managed, my voice trembling. The adrenaline was storming through me, my limbs shaking and my breathing broken and ragged. My heart struggled against its ribcage as the reality of what had just happened started to sink in.
"I had to use the red ropes first, just to keep it busy while I laid out the entrapment stones,"
Wade replied, then motioned for me to step forward.
"Come closer, I need to jar this bastard. It's bad enough I had to kill the other two."
I glanced around, noticing the world was still and quiet beyond the bluish bubble.
What's this?"
I asked, my voice trembling.
"We call it a time lapse. It only holds for about 7, maybe 10 minutes at most,"
Wade replied.
"It isolates a specific patch of time and space, enough for me to do my job, basically."
He then spoke the spell that forced the gargoyle into its smoky form. It got sucked into the jar, and I quickly put the lid on, twisting it tightly as the formless creature tumbled around in its glass receptacle. I then remembered Daisy. My car was utterly destroyed, as if a 50-ton cement ball had been dropped on top of it. I could barely distinguish its original design. My Daisy was a pile of mangled metal and rubber. Tears rolled down my cheeks while I came to terms with the fact that I no longer had a car. It hurt like hell, and Wade didn't seem to understand.
"Why are you crying?"
he asked. There was a pang in my heart that I didn't recognize. It was his. He didn't like to see me cry. "Tough luck, bro. I'm bawling like a little girl right now."
That's my car,"
I cried out, pointing at my Daisy. He casually glanced at it, then shrugged and took the jar from my hands.
"It's just a car. Inanimate object. You can buy another one. A better one, for that matter. You should switch to electric anyway.
Oh, please.
I scowled, rubbing my eyes.
You wouldn't understand.
It's just a car, Harley. You're alive. That's what matters.
It's not just a car. It's my car. This was the first thing I bought when I became independent. Daisy meant the world to me. She was my symbol of freedom. Not just a car.
Wade stared at me for a few moments while I tried to regain my composure. My body was reacting to adrenaline withdrawal, my muscles and joints shaking like crazy. He moved closer and put a hand on my shoulder, squeezing gently.
"It'll be okay," he said. "You're good. You made it. And you held your own against three gargoyles. Not something that a mediocre can easily pull off, believe me."
Was that a compliment? I nodded, sniffing as I looked around again.
"What do we do now?"
I asked, worried about the people outside the protective bubble.
"They didn't see or have any direct contact with the gargoyles. I bet they just saw a crazy girl falling out the window," he replied, reaching for his phone.
He dialed a number, then waited for someone to pick up.
"Yeah, it's Crowley. There was an incident at Harley Smith's apartment, Park West." "Yes. Requesting permission to flash witnesses until we do a thorough cleanup tomorrow." "Yes. Thank you."
He hung up, then gave me a brief smirk.
"What?"
I frowned, too bummed out to enjoy the sliver of satisfaction coming out of him.
"Let me show you something cool," he replied,
then gave me the jar again.
"Actually, you can hold on to this."
He put his hands out, the rings on his fingers lighting up blue.
"What are you doing?"
I asked.
"The upside to using a time lapse in the form of a sphere is that we can add another spell to its surface," Wade explained. "What happens is that the sphere usually explodes outward in a puff of energy once the time lapse expires. So we can use the force of that explosion to push out another spell. In this case, a memory wiper."
He muttered another spell, and the sphere turned from blue to white, then burst outward in a blinding flash. I had to close my eyes for a second. Once I opened them, I saw the people around us blink several times, then walk away, absentmindedly. Time resumed its normal flow, and nobody seemed too bothered about the mangled car or the broken windows on the fifth floor.
"You made them forget," I murmured. "Not exactly. It's short-term hypnosis. I'm not capable of performing mass hypnosis yet. But this will keep them in a haze for about 24 hours, which gives us enough time to come back tomorrow and wipe their memories one by one."
"How will we find them tomorrow?" I asked, watching as the crowd dissipated on the left side of the street as well.
"The spell leaves traces of my energy behind," he replied. "I'll be able to detect it tomorrow."
"Like a tracking device," I concluded, and he nodded. The biggest question finally made its way past my lips. What the hell were three gargoyles doing in my apartment? Why'd they come after me? Where did they come from? Okay, three questions. Compared to how many I had for follow-up, I figured I'd ease him into it.
"I honestly have no idea," Wade replied, and I could feel his befuddlement. "The one you're holding came from the bestiary, that I'm sure of. I recognized its tracking number."
"Huh?"
"Remember, we track our monsters. They're all tagged right behind the ear."
He instinctively pointed at his ear.
"You won't like this, though. It's the same gargoyle you and I captured the other night at the casino."
"Wait, what?" My jaw dropped, and I stared at the smoky jar for a couple of seconds. "What about the other two? Also from the bestiary?"
"No," he said, shaking his head. "They're wildlings, and judging by how they behaved, they were freshly made, too. Which means there are more undiscovered magicals in San Diego, and they've recently purged."
"I don't get it, Wade. Why did they come after me? Why me, of all people?" I asked, unable to wrap my head around the concept that I had been the deliberate target of a gargoyle attack.
"I wish I had an answer, Harley," but I don't. My first thought was that this bad boy here came looking for revenge, but I can't explain how he got hold of the other two, or how they found you here. I'll go over this with Alton later, though. He might have some insights.
Another question slipped to the front of the line in my head. What were you doing here anyway? I asked him.
Wade stilled, then scratched the back of his head awkwardly. There's a good Chinese place just up the road from here, he replied. I heard the growls.
He wasn't very convincing, but he was definitely hungry. I could feel the knot in his stomach echoing in mine, the psychological pressure to eat something soon. Or was that me? Chances were that after what had just happened, my empathy was a little glitchy or inaccurate. I was still shaking in my boots, after all. But I was thankful to see Wade. Had it not been for him, I probably would have gotten killed. And who knew how many innocent people would have died in the process.
Can I buy you some Chinese dinner, then? I asked, putting on a faint smile. It's the least I can do for the fact that you just saved my life.
He looked at me for what felt like a minute, then offered a brief nod.
I never say no to free food, he replied. And you're welcome.
Chapter 16.
You're obviously not going back to your apartment tonight, Wade said.
He'd already notified the coven of what had happened at my place, and we were waiting for our food order at Wong's, a local Chinese restaurant with red and gold wallpaper and one too many paper lanterns hanging overhead. It wasn't too busy at this hour, but there was always a bit of time to burn while waiting for the freshly made spring rolls and fried rice. This place was a hidden gem.
Yeah, I figured that much. I sighed, fiddling with a pair of chopsticks. But my rent's paid up. I will go back at some point. I guess I'll be staying at the coven for a few days after all.
You should put in your notice still, Wade offered. You're much safer in the coven. You might even end up liking it better than that apartment. Plus, it's rent-free.
I'm not letting a bunch of gargoyles drive me out of my first real home, I replied, then chuckled softly.
Wow, I never thought I'd say something like that, Wade smirked.
Welcome to the real world.
I was seeing a slightly different side of him. Brave, noble, and protective, Wade Crowley. He'd swooped in and saved me, but only because I had felt overwhelmed. I'd barely known how to handle one gargoyle, not to mention three. It seemed those preceptors were going to help me fill in a lot of gaps, with knowledge that made the difference between a living Harley and a dead-as-a-doornail Harley. Wade's phone beeped, a text message showing up on the screen. I couldn't see who it was from at that angle, so I raised my eyebrows at him.
It's Santana, he said, quickly glancing over the text. She wants to know if you're okay.
That's sweet, I replied. Santana was one of the few magicals who didn't look at me with wariness, just curiosity.
She wants you to know there's a room ready for you at the coven, Wade added, rereading the text with a slight frown. She made sure it's right next to hers.
She strong-armed Alton? I chuckled.
No, he sighed. Knowing Santana, she probably messed with the architecture and forcibly relocated one of her neighboring magicals. She's very determined by nature. The laws of physics don't have much of an impact on her decisions.
I've noticed there's a competitive spirit in the San Diego coven, I said slowly. Especially where you and Garrett are concerned. What's up with that?
Wade was caught off guard by the question. I felt his anxiousness and disdain coming through, all of it aimed at Garrett.
It's nothing personal, he shrugged. Garrett's not a mediocre, but he sure likes to act like one, unless it involves making me look bad. He's lazy, and rarely have I seen him perform at full capacity, which can border on jaw-dropping once he lets loose. He's truly spectacular, but he's got a bad mouth on him, and he's not particularly adept at the thinking part, you know, prior to speaking. And that just enables brats like Finch and Poe to think it's okay to be absolute jerks. The difference is that Garrett gets away with a lot of crap because of his parents. His mom runs the San Francisco coven, and his dad is on the Texas Mage Council. They're divorced and spoil Garrett as a result.
Why is he in San Diego, then? Why isn't he with his mom or his dad?
I replied, a clearer picture of Garrett forming in my head. I know for a fact that Garrett got on the wrong side of the San Francisco coven, and his mom had to transfer him here. But nobody knows the details, except for Alton. And he won't tell, Wade said. Alton hates gossip, which is funny because it's been a defining trait of this coven for years. He's hoping to fix that. Well, he's hoping to fix a lot of things, but I'm not sure how much he'll get done in this lifetime. What about you? What brought you to the San Diego coven? I asked, realizing I wasn't all that interested in Garrett's backstory. He came across as the rich, arrogant bully who never got in too much trouble, despite his blatant misdemeanors. He was also an enabler of Finch's toxic behavior, and that had almost gotten me in hot water. It was better if I just kept my distance from that group. Wade, on the other hand, had captured my interest in more than one way, and reading his emotions didn't feel like enough. I came here 5 years ago, around the same time as Garrett, but of my own volition, Wade replied. Why? I mean, from what you're all telling me, the San Diego coven isn't exactly illustrious.
It isn't, but it has potential, he explained. Halifax was running the show when I got here, and we didn't get along very well. I raised flags with the Mage Council and eventually had him removed. I believe that the Magical Society is only as good as its lowest-rated coven, and San Diego is very close to the bottom line. I took it as a challenge, and I've been working to improve it ever since. I grinned.
So you are eyeing a leadership position in the future?
It would be foolish not to.
Wade cocked his head to the side, a smile flickering across his face.
Alton won't live forever, and I am of noble descent, after all. My name means something in this world, and I'm expected to achieve great things, which of course I intend to do.
Oh, noble descent, I said, feigning a British accent. Shall I call you sire?
He didn't immediately respond. Instead, his deep green eyes drilled through me, while I sensed amusement and pride emanating from him.
Have you ever heard of Aleister Crowley, Harley?
The name rings a bell. Given my murky state of mind after the gargoyle attack, my synapses weren't functioning as smoothly as I would have wanted. The name did sound familiar, but for the life of me, I couldn't find its origins.
He was a famed English occultist in the first half of the 20th century, Wade said, as I started remembering what I'd read on the subject. His public life, the one known to humans, that is, was mostly a hoax. He founded a religion, experimented with drugs, and fathered 3 children. He's known mostly for his writings.
But the magical world remembers him differently? Wade nodded.
Beyond the facade of the ceremonial magician, the wickedest man in the world was, in fact, one of the most accomplished warlocks in modern history. He dedicated his life to portraying that whimsical, dysfunctional man, while his surviving children continued his work. He lived during a time when wars were tearing through our world, and magicals were risking exposure, particularly in times of such disputes between nations.
Why were war times extra risky? I asked, struggling to make a connection to the history I knew.
There were magicals who sought to profit from their presence on the battlefield.
He shook his head in disdain.
The world wars weren't just a matter of humans versus humans. We had to get involved, too, trying to protect our society from discovery because of those terrible few. Crowley's persona did the job and managed to discredit many who tried to come forward as magicals.
I take it you're related to Aleister Crowley, then?
And happy to brag about it. Lola, one of his daughters, was my great-grandmother. I never met her, though, Wade replied. You'll learn all about the Crowleys in your coven history class. But just to finish my point here, yes, I am related to him. And yes, I plan to continue honoring the name as best I can. Though I'm not a fan of such theatrical deceit as Aleister Crowley's.
Yeah, you don't strike me as charismatic enough to pull off such a persona. I giggled. For a second, I worried he might have gotten offended, judging by his straight face. But all I was getting from him was a gentle chuckle on the inside.
What about your parents? My mother is the director of the Houston Coven, and my father is on the Texas Mage Council, he replied, a tinge of pride in his tone.
Ah, that's why you know about Garrett's troubled past.